on your own.
All right.
We have one person that did call in.
Okay, who's in the, who is it?
Molly's
here. Oh, Molly, okay. All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colker meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today for a work session on case number PU 13-848. It's approximately 1:30 on Tuesday, June 10th. This is, I believe, our second work session. And so I don't have any opening comments. I'd see if Commissioner Crispin does, and I'll turn it over to portfolio holder Commissioner Fedorchuk.
We've gotten a lot of information in the recent days here leading up to this. It was that I found pretty useful, answered a lot of questions in my mind. I still have a few more, but I'll wait till after the presentations, and maybe they'll be answered just having the experts go through them. But so I have really no opening comments except to thank everybody for all the work that's been done since our last work session.
Okay. All right. Commissioner Fedorchuk, we'll turn it over to you.
We did get a lot of information, and I have reviewed it, but I am going to need some time to review it in more detail because I haven't gone through it real thoroughly. But for today's purpose, maybe Julie and Mitch, you can walk us through the late filed exhibits or the information that was filed with us late yesterday afternoon, I believe, and sort of give us your take on it, your summaries of it, and then we can go from there.
I'll just start off and kind of go through. There's several different things and different angles, but basically where we're at, I think, on staff side is we have sent around a proposed order. We've all gone through it, so we have that if the commission wants to review it. On Friday, we received an update to late filed Exhibit 5, which is basically the late filed that deals with the Devil's Lake issues. It discusses both the valve placement construction issues as well as emergency response issues around Devil's Lake. I found it to be fairly responsive, I believe, to all the questions or most of the questions the commission asked at the last work session, and it also went into just pointed some of the record part out and some of the constructability issues of moving further north to avoid Devil's Lake even further. Along with that, too, we did also receive a request from the company in their cover letter and proposed findings asking if the commission would cite its facilities prior to entering an order. So that's kind of a standing issue, too, that we can talk about.
Say that again.
The company has requested in conversations with staff and now in a proposed order to, apparently they have a July 1st somewhat deadline or increase in expense if they don't begin construction of the facilities, the Lakota station, the other stations along the road. So they've asked that we enter in an order on the stations if this order is going to extend past July 1st. So I think we can talk about that separately, too. Just wanted the commission to be aware of that. And then this morning filed was supplements to late filed 2 and late filed 4, which are the Samuelson reroute and the UND reroute, basically providing the maps along with an affidavit about the easement process and, you know, verifying that all cultural and biological surveys will be completed before any construction on those areas. So that's the nuts and bolts of the new information we have received from the company that's within the record at this point.
So the UND issue is completed. They're rerouting. They've gotten all the easements. They're just going to go around that area that UND was concerned about.
Correct.
The Samuelson one, similarly, they have all the easements they need, except for one, and Bremer Bank is close to providing that.
With the Samuelson one, everything except for Bremer Bank, and they're waiting on title to get cleared up. There's a title issue with one of the property owners, so that's where we're at with that.
Just before we leave that topic, the notice requirement on that, one more time?
On the reroute? Well, that's an interesting legal issue, but the way this hearing is shaken out and the way the exhibits are, I don't think we have a notice requirement on those reroutes because these were issues specifically brought up at the hearing with late filed exhibits dealing with this exact issue of resolving this. So I don't think it's required that the commission even issue a notice for those reroutes. I think the commission has the opportunity, if it wants to issue a notice of opportunity, but I certainly don't think the law requires that.
Speaking for me, I guess if we don't have to, I don't think we need to, but do we put that in the order somewhere that shows we at least considered it, or would that stand on its own if someone reviews the record?
That would stand on its own.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Is adding two nearly 90-degree corners west of Grand Forks there lessen the reliability or anything of the pipeline as a whole?
Not to my knowledge. I know they...
Weren't they nearly 90 degrees before as well? There were,
and I know there's 90-degree turns, and I mean we've had 90-degree turns in several pipelines before. But I guess I'm thinking, assuming, if you will, that if this would impact the performance of the pipeline, it's something that would have been brought up by the company or a concern raised by them at the hearings or in dealing with rerouting it.
Okay, who would like to go through the Devil's Lake information?
Kind of like just in total?
Yeah.
I'll start. We've got two supplements. It's the first one that we talked about some at the last meeting and then the updated one based on the information from the last meeting. So do you want us to go through the first one we received also, Commissioner, or just the new stuff?
The new stuff since the last meeting, work session.
The new stuff starts with basically the supplement laying out what they have, and they discuss what they do with groundwater construction issues, and it basically depends on the nature of the site, and they talk about, you know, explain their...
Before you talk, Mitch... Direct us to what you're referencing here.
It was filed on Friday.
June 6th.
Titled Supplement to Late Filed Exhibit Number 5. It wasn't on the docket yet yesterday when I pulled it off.
I'm seeing lots of pre-filed. I have copies of all the pre-filed testimony.
I don't think I have that.
The supplemental that Mitch is referencing? June 6th it was filed, North Dakota Pipeline Company's supplement to late file exhibit number 5. Is that this?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
So that document essentially goes through a lot of the questions that were asked at the last work session about groundwater construction, lake construction. Then it talks about the Devil's Lake area construction, and it identifies where the valves will be placed. If you can see there. And then as you go where it talks about the Devil's Lake construction, you'll see they've attached an Exhibit A, which discusses their DOT type of review for water crossings and the safety measures for going around Devil's Lake, which is Exhibit A. And then they go into the Devil's Lake Emergency Response Plan. And lastly, they talk about the route to the north, so why they picked the route they did versus something further north. So there's basically, I think, three areas that we could talk about, either the construction in the Devil's Lake area, the emergency response, or the selection of the route where it's at. So if you want me to go through all three of those, I can, or I could just answer questions, too.
I felt pretty comfortable with their explanation before, actually, as far as their methods of construction, but I've never understood the rationale for or what effort was made to look at further north.
Well, basically what we have further north is there's the company, what the company says is there's wildlife refuges, then there's the city of Kandu, and then there's other environmentally, you know, sensitive areas that you run into there. And, you know, that's all, I mean, it's summarized, I guess, on the third page of that document.
Isn't it something, though, Mitch, with, I remember this from some of our power line hearings where, you know, we're either accepting or rejecting the route in front of us. You don't get into the fact that it could have, should have, would have. If you don't like a certain part of the route, then we open up the corridor and let them figure out a different route, where it's tough precedent to start saying this is better than that. You have the route in front of you, you accept or reject.
Yeah, for the most part, we evaluate their chosen route based on the siting criteria. I mean, if we can identify a route that is clearly better or something, you know, which doesn't happen all that often, at least not for major portions of the route, it's pretty much you evaluate the route in front of you based on the siting criteria.
Well, I think for some time to come, the decision that we make here is going to be questioned, and I think there's some obligation to be able to explain ourselves. And, you know, yeah, I realize, like, I don't know exactly what it is. Probably looks like about 4 miles north is the city of Kandu, and you know, you get beyond that, and it gets to be a really long ways. But in between there is some roughly 4 miles, and I would like a little more explanation than just that. While there are some wildlife management areas, and you named a couple other things, but are those avoidance or exclusion areas, or are they just things that someone at the company is not wanting to go through? And do we have a map of those that shows how much of that stuff is up there that is the reason for staying this far south?
Julie does have a map that kind of lays out where everything's at, and I was just pulling it up on my computer. But go ahead, Julie.
Make sure you grab the mic, Julie, too, when you're talking.
The map in front of you is simply some layers I pulled down off the state hub. They're available to everyone. In testimony, there was discussion of avoidance of, the route was selected based on avoidance of Snyder Lake Wildlife Refuge to the north, Lake Alice National Wildlife Refuge in the Devil's Lake Basin. Also, I pulled down some layers for waterfall production areas. Those are the pink, and those are under the management of the refuges or owned by the refuges. And also some state land showed up in here. And this isn't meant to be all-inclusive of all avoidance or exclusion areas, state or federally owned, between these points, but it might give us some, just a place to start from.
Well, I don't see a scale on this map that I'm looking at, but Kandu's kind of right in the middle of it. So Snyder Lake and this waterfall production areas, that's all north of Kandu even. But what's the distance going south? Where would the pipeline be if that was on this map as proposed?
I did not overlay the route on this. This was something I was just looking at between these two areas. But the route from the map that Matt had previously prepared is south of this little kink here in Highway 281, so it would be going through here. Each of these red squares is a section, 1 square mile.
So the pipeline is in this area somewhere.
It's south of this little kink here, so it would be going through here.
What's that green? Is that the 1863 or whatever level?
This green corresponds with the green on Matt's map.
Okay.
It's just simply the 1458, which represents the overfill. I'm not capable of doing what Matt does and putting the orange on here. That's a different methodology. These are just simple layers that I pulled down and added to the map. This requires his skills. So
1458, the overflow on the east.
Right.
At the Cheyenne Point.
Correct, on the southeast part of the basin.
Okay.
So this pipeline is below water even at 1458?
Yes. According to this map, is that map Matt had put together too.
And what here in this first couple miles south of Candu, are there any avoidance or exclusion areas up there?
The layers that I pulled down were state-owned lands and waterfowl production areas. I don't know what else might be in here, but from the state hub, this is what I was able to pull down. So it doesn't appear that there's anything else in there, but that doesn't mean that there isn't. So I also generally noted the valve locations in case you want to talk about that.
I did. Okay. Thank you for the reminder.
The west valve they're showing is off over here in this general area, which would be, according to Matt's map, significantly west of Highway 281. So it would not show up in either the red or the orange or the green. The east valve that they proposed is over here, east of Highway 20. And that appears that it would be also at or outside of the 1462.
So the only appurtenances in the area are above 1462?
According to the late filed information that they provided.
Yeah. The valves are at 1487 and 1465 elevation, and they're actually a distance from the lake. It's part of Exhibit A.
Exhibit A.
The last page of the what's titled Exhibit A, Summary of Risk Assessment for Valve Placement.
And just one other thing I'd like to make clear is, in the Devil's Lake Basin, there's two datums used, and they do differ. So when I'm referring to 1458 or the lake elevation or gauge heights or project heights, those are in the 1929 datum. And I'm assuming we're all on the same page here because there's about a foot difference between the datums. I think it's like 1.2 feet. But if they're referring to the 88 datum, it's actually over a foot higher than the 29 datum, so we're good there. I'm drawing on surveying 101 knowledge here. But if you understand that difference between datums, the reference points when you measure something.
So the maps we're looking at are the worst case scenario or the best case scenario?
Those would be the worst case scenario.
What's the outlet level again?
The constructed outlet on the southeast side where it spills to the Cheyenne is 1458. And again, that's 29 datum.
Tell me 29 datum. What? I don't have any reference to that survey.
Okay.
Lingo.
Okay. There's datums are your reference points where you measure relative to some point or to some elevation. Somewhere between, you know, the 29 datum, there's an 88 datum. There was changes in methodology, and it was redone. So there's a different reference point, and it's like 1.2 feet higher. So if you're referencing something in 1458 using the 88 datum, you're actually higher than if you were referencing using your 1929 datum. So that was something that isn't really clear in these documents, and I just wanted to point that out for the engineers in the room.
On that map, where's Lake Alice?
This is Lake Alice down here. This is the refuge of Lake Alice, is this area. And when they refer to Mauve Coulee, this is the large drainage coming in from the north.
Can you pass that map down this way, Randy, when you're done?
If I can ask Julie another question here, though, on it. But you'd have to come over here. So I'm looking at this kind of a triangle on this map.
Right.
Knowing that the proposed pipeline is above it, would that be basically this triangle right here?
Correct.
So that pipe goes about here, did you say?
Yeah. You can see this little kink here in Highway 281 right there. And this is just something I threw together, and I'm sorry I didn't overlay the road, but it enters about right there, comes across. So yes, that is that. This part here does represent that ground shown in this map.
So this is kind of the line here.
Yes, essentially.
Okay.
Here's the county line, right there at that point. And exits, starts curving down and exits about so, and out.
About here.
Right. Start turning down.
Like that.
Something like that. Right.
Not too scientific. Okay, thank you.
And the water level is what right now, Julie?
I didn't check the gauge today or prior to this meeting, but the last time I looked, it was 1453, I believe. Let me double check.
So will they be constructing through the lake for this route today?
I don't have a map that shows the, I believe it's just the portions that are through water today are simply on the Mauve Coulee area, the north drainage that I pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
That part is really the only part that's underwater or would be considered a water crossing right now.
Okay.
And you can, Exhibit A is supposed to reflect that.
Well, I want to digest more of this material that they've submitted on this particular issue. So I don't know that I have any additional questions here, but I am willing to entertain some sort of progress on the rest of the route if we want to break this piece off and segregate this for now, or if we want to just deal with the stations. I don't know that this will need to drag on beyond the 1st of July, but what would you two like to do?
I can just tell you, I guess from legal's perspective, you're better off having one order than multiple orders on the pipeline. I mean, I know the company's requested it, and I think it's within the commission's power to break it up if you want, but there are some legal concerns, if you will, with parsing the orders.
And what would the drawbacks be?
Well, there's just one is when you start working on one order, it delays getting the other one done, the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's two orders that somebody could appeal. You're ordering on parts of it without complete information on the rest of it, so then,
yeah.
I mean, you're trying to piece parts of it together. I think those would be the main ones. I mean, I don't think anything necessarily prevents it, but I suspect that there's also a concern of precedent. I mean, there's, you get companies who are ready to build part of a pipeline anytime and wanting to say, hey, let us get our stations done,
And now they did provide us with reference the testimony in the hearing where they talked about why this route versus the one north. They didn't really provide any information about the gap in between and why that was not legitimate or not pursued. Is it impossible for them to provide that information now? That's just, there's no means for them to get that discussion on the record?
What area are we talking about? I'm a little confused. It seems like we're talking about maybe a mile north or somewhere 2 miles north. Is that what we're talking about?
It seemed like there was like 14 miles between the northern route that they suggested and what they actually chose. So what was stopping them from just going a mile or two or four, or whatever it would require to just get out of the highest lake level at 1463 or whatever the highest possible lake level was? Why? What's there that prevents them from looking at a route there? And we've asked that a couple times now and haven't really gotten anything back from them. So I'm wondering if why.
And if I could just blend another mm-hmm. answer into what you just said to Mitch's same question. As I look at that, my understanding now is that the proposal is about 4 miles from Candu, roughly. And as I look at this map, if it was a mile north, it would make a big impact. If it was 2 miles north, it would be huge. And, you know, it seems like the response has been, well, 10 miles north of Candu yet is some waterfowl protection areas. But that really wasn't the question. To me, a couple miles north or even one would make a huge
impact. And I guess my understanding from the last work session was not so much that we were talking about necessarily that 1 or 2 mile difference, but that's going off my recollection. I mean, I thought we'd talked about that and said, oh, maybe we're not concerned about it, and then just an explanation of why they didn't go further north.
Mm-mm. Up around. No. We got that. We got the explanation about the further north route right away, and that was even, I think, at one of our hearings. But for the last two work sessions, we've been asking for information of why not something in between those that gets them out of the lake, the highest possible lake level or highest likely possible lake level, and but, you know, not way far north. It adds a substantial length to the overall route, and, you know, there was a number of concerns in that route. So I agree with Randy. I'm still looking for that information, and I just am wondering if it's a issue that they don't have a method for getting that on the record.
And so as I'm looking at, I guess, just so I can make sure and understand where we're at here, if I look at this Exhibit A to Exhibit A of late supplement to late file Exhibit 5, that's their map, and they've got 1458 mapped out there, and my understanding of why they have that is because once it gets to 1458, it overflows at the Cheyenne. What's the 1463 number come from then?
That, Julie, do you want to explain that?
We've talked before. There's and per Representative Nelson's testimony too, there's a differential between the spill outlet to the Cheyenne in the far southeast part of the basin and you know what the lake could possibly rise to in the north part of the basin. There's no hard and fast number. There's no studies. The Corps has done some work. The Water Commission's kind of looked at it. No one's saying this is exactly the number that it would be in the north end of the basin, but there's so much obstruction, the roads as dams issue, the dikes, so forth, the delay from getting from the north to far southeast part of the basin that needs to be taken into consideration. And when I visited with the Water Commission, I said, these numbers have been proposed. Well, how do you feel about those? The responses I received, it is not unreasonable to consider 1462, possibly even 1463.
As the height of the lake?
As a
in that area.
Upper, and in the, you know, there's spring runoff events, there's high rain events, that water can back up significantly up there.
Well, maybe Brian knows if we have something additional in the record between the pipeline and the Candu area.
I don't recall anything specifically relating to that. I would like to note, earlier Julie asked if the pipeline will be going under the lake at any point right now. If you look at the document we were looking at earlier, the North Dakota Pipeline Company's supplementally filed exhibit number 5, under the third bullet point on the second line, they do specifically state that the project route intentionally avoids an actual lake crossing by staying further to the north. So, I mean, this is not probably a specific answer as to why they're not looking at moving, you know, 4 miles north, 1 mile north, 100 feet north. It's just, I think this is the the level that they feel is reasonably kind of mitigates the distance of the pipeline and still avoids the lake at this time.
Yeah. I haven't said too much, I guess, throw my two thoughts back to your question before, Julie. The last work session, I had a lot of questions about constructability in some of those areas, and I think those were all answered. And in my viewpoint of whatever the lake level is, it's more about how you construct it. You're going to be 4 or 6 feet under the ground, so the surface data where the water is going to be at or not be at, to me, it's almost like it's going to happen no matter all. The water is going to sit above a pipeline at some point in time, whether it's a future, you know, a pothole that develops or something. So that's why, in my opinion, the emergency response capabilities are so important. If my colleagues would like to have extra precautions in that area, I'm fine with that. But I would recommend that if you want to go that way, we could, you know, extra shutoff valves like we talked about, or extra pipe thickness. And I think personally, if we start getting in the habit of trying to pick the exact spot of a route, that's not the way it's designed. If you want to put a caveat and say we want no pipeline at an area where the elevation is no higher than, and pick some number and let the company figure out that route, if you're going to, because otherwise you're trying to pick the exact route of this pipeline. So I'm ready to vote on the order the way it is, quite honestly. But I'm certainly open to further discussion if you want extra provisions on certain parts of it. But that's the way I see the whole water level issue, is that it's going to change. You're trying to relate to ever-changing numbers, what the surface level is of the water, where it's going to be. I mean, you'd have to go down to at the 1458 surface level, what does that mean? The groundwater, it opens up a whole bunch of things. That's where the construction, to me, was the most important question, how they can construct it, how they're going to monitor it, the response capability they have in the place. And if you want extra thickness like we requested or they offered up under the river crossing, maybe we could do that in this area.
That's true, except if they just went a couple miles north, they could avoid it altogether.
There would be other issues that would come up if we went 2 miles north. If we want to go that route, fine.
But you wouldn't be dealing with putting a potential pipeline in the bottom of Devil's Lake and the additional risks that creates in the event of a spill.
The way I understand groundwater is that groundwater is present everywhere. And you're right about the lake aspect, but wherever you put a pipeline, there's groundwater. And so you have to have those provisions in place. And so, and as far as bifurcating the order, I wouldn't support that. Either let's vote for all of it or none of it until we're ready.
How do you distinguish groundwater from a lake? What's the difference?
Groundwater, what you have a lake is when groundwater surfaces, is about what it's come down to. You got a hill on two sides. The groundwater is down here. Where you get the valley is where the groundwater equals the lake. There's a water level that's in the soil. Depending on hills and valleys, that's where sometimes you have lakes because the elevation around is higher, but the groundwater extends all the way. It links between all water bodies.
So if there's a spill in the groundwater up here, is your belief that it would contaminate all of Devil's Lake?
It would.
Not if it wasn't underground, though.
Well, sure. Whenever you have a leak, it's going to migrate down to the groundwater and get in the groundwater. That's why you don't want leaks. But, yes, there's a higher risk because you have a water body there. But there's groundwater everywhere. That's why the pipe response is so important. Julie's the water expert. I mean, there's groundwater everywhere. You always have that risk. It's whether you can use it for sports and recreation or if it's drinking water, like we have wellhead protection things in place.
I believe in some areas they were talking about actually going below groundwater level, but I guess the issue here is we're talking about the pipe being inundated, you know, where you couldn't really even access it.
Right.
So there's that for extended periods of time.
Versus if they went further north, you wouldn't have that issue.
Potentially not.
But you might have other issues. That's the caveat. You don't know what's to the north until they fully study it and investigate it. And if that's what we want to do, then that's what we can do. I just throw up my 2 cents worth. It's like crossing a river, except the river you have no alternatives going north or south, so I understand that point.
And that is the big difference, that, mm-hmm. that here there seems to be an alternative, and maybe there's a real good reason why it's not even worth exploring any further, but I've never heard that reason yet. And I just to wrap up a few things, I also don't think we should divide this order up. I don't want to see this just, I mean, we could drag it on forever, and, mm-hmm. and I don't think that's a responsible approach as regulators. If July 1st is kind of an important timing standpoint as far as making other things come together, I'm perfectly fine with voting on this before July 1st. But I'll just say that the odds of me having a favorable vote are higher if this thing wasn't, if this thing was being proposed on higher ground than on lower ground. And so I'll leave it up to the company to figure out whether they want to explore something a little further or not. But
well, to that point, Randy, maybe you can give some more definition of what you mean by higher. We've talked about 1458. Do you want everything constructed at or above 1460s? I mean, give them some little more exact guidance so then they could follow through with your request, potentially.
Well, you know, I look at this map that's in front of me, and it's not labeled, so I don't know which one it is, but the specifics of this answer aren't so important. But at the 1458 level, it is primarily underwater most of the way through, looks like probably about 5 miles. If they were a couple of miles north, they would probably be under the 1462 line just here and there, probably less than 50% of the time at 4 feet higher. That would be a major improvement. If they went several miles north, there'd be, it looks like to me, maybe one little finger that they would be crossing. Mm-hmm. Well, all of these things, depending on where something leaks, yeah, if it crosses 30 feet, there's a chance that it could leak and be in the water, but it's a lot less than if it crosses 5 miles. And so they've obviously chosen this route for some reason. And whatever is up here, to tell you the truth, there's 300 miles of this that I find pretty responsibly done. And one little section that I just don't get why they are choosing this route. And so I probably would end up agreeing with them if I had an explanation of what's up there that concerns them. I realize it would be just a little longer, and length is always an additional cost, but they didn't mind going a little longer to go around the UND grassland. So I don't think that it's probably that's causing them to stay this far south. But I just would be very curious to know what pushes them to want to stay at this line.
Fair enough.
Okay. I agree with you, Randy. I'd like that explanation as well. And so is there other issues?
The only thing that I had down was for Mitch and the legal minds, Brian, when we go through the process of we combine the corridor and route, it's predominantly because nowadays the route and the corridor have kind of merged into the same thing. I'm thinking if there's a way we can tighten up some of our findings or rationale as to why we do that. In the past, we've kind of left it, we've answered it, but I'd like to start thinking about ways to tighten that up even tighter.
Well, are you talking about why we waive the procedures?
Right.
Well, the statute simply requires that or allows the procedures to be waived when there's minimum adverse effects. You know, so we always make those findings, you know, and that's actually consistent language, very similar to the language that allows the commission to approve it. So we go through all the siting criteria and discuss the impacts in their, you know, relative degree, and then when we get to the waiver portion of it, I mean, the standard that we have is whether it's minimal adverse effects. So that's why we use that language.
So there's no way that you think we could add a little additional weight to that somehow?
Well, I would put it.
We're answering the full question.
I would put it this way. It's answered basically in the findings of fact of why there's minimal adverse effects. When you start, I would always recommend against adding
sure.
non-legal criteria to the analysis of a legal question.
Okay. Because maybe that's something that three of us should talk about in a different meeting, but the way I understand it set up was back in the day, the corridors would be, you know, 4, 5, 6 miles. So you go through a corridor hearing, and you define the corridor, and you come back to a route. Now when the companies apply, the route is the corridor. So there's, in my mind, there's really no value to having the corridors. So you, but it always sets up, we're always waiving these things, but we're waiving them for good reason because the route is the core. It's the same thing nowadays.
Yeah, and it's, maybe it's a, I don't know, we could speculate what it's a function of, but it's, you know, when you're going through and you're getting easements for these long lines, I mean, they have a fairly precise location, so there's no real necessity for a real large corridor when you pretty much know where the route is going to go.
But I think that's something the three of us should consider, is that changing that, because there really is no corridor justification anymore, because
that,
it's so specific when the companies file, whether it's a pipeline or a power line.
That would be a legislative change, I mean, obviously, because that's in the Century Code. But, you know, I mean, I know the, wasn't it the Minn Kota line from around Center up to the Grand Forks area, there were separate corridor and route proceedings for that line, so it still has been used.
Correct. That was the only question I had to answer your question, Julie.
In our last work session, we talked a bit about some PHMSA requirements, Section 195 for PHMSA, and the direction that it provides on high consequence areas. Staff, you guys were going to look into that.
Yeah. That is all, I guess, what they provided was,
which
the company provided is that Exhibit A of what their PHMSA risk assessment was as far as where valve placements go and such. And I think, I mean, it brings up an interesting issue that's relevant to something Commissioner Kalk brought up earlier, too, is, you know, what, I think it's within the commission's jurisdiction to ask and consider, you know, what safety precautions are in place to evaluate whether any effects or impacts will be minimal and things like that. But the DOT regulations really provide pretty specific guidance and requirements on companies of what safety requirements and pipe thickness and things of that nature are at least an absolute minimum, depending on what circumstances are being evaluated. So that brings in interesting legal questions of how much can we, you know, require additional safety measures or additional pipe thickness, you know, without being preempted by federal requirements, absent agreement otherwise. Go ahead, Pat.
Grab a mic, Pat.
Just to point out that the federal requirements are minimum requirements. And when we're doing pipeline safety, we also have a law that says we cannot exceed the federal requirements. But when we're doing siting, it doesn't apply in siting.
Interesting.
I think that's the case. So I don't know if legal's ever thought about that part of it, but I think we can require something in siting that doesn't necessarily go against the pipeline safety requirements that we have.
That's a good thing.
I guess the only other thing I was going to point out was that Enbridge had done the analysis for the Devil's Lake area and said that it wasn't a high consequence area.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't like to necessarily take legal positions on the record at a public work session because I might have to take a different one some point later on. But I would just say noted. But there is the preemption issues are complex, and I think there is the potential to be able to have greater safety measures if we can relate them to, you know, the siting criteria. But I think it'd be, you know, pretty interesting close legal question, frankly.
So they didn't consider this a high consequence area because it doesn't meet the population criteria. It's not a drinking water source or an unusually sensitive ecological area. Okay. Well,
isn't any, since it flows into the Cheyenne, into the Red, isn't it a drinking water source? I mean, we pump out of this lake. into the Cheyenne, and that flows into the Red, correct?
Which flows into Canada, so forth, at some point.
I'm going to turn your mic on, Jules.
As a primary water source, you know, it eventually, when we start, splitting hairs, it's this source, but yet it flows to the Red, then it flows to Canada, and at what point do you draw the line? Or I think we kind of talked about that last time when you mentioned, the potential international issues and so forth, but everything eventually goes downhill, so.
Good point. Noted.
All right. Well, I think we should set one more work session and see if we can wrap it up then. I'd really like to hear back from the company if there's any way to get additional information on that northern route that would entirely avoid the lake at its 1462 level. It seems to me that they are kind of assuming that the lake level is 14, the highest level is 1458, which is, we know that's just not true in this part of the lake, and have built it based on that, but even there, they're still crossing out, as Randy said, a good chunk of potential lake. So why is there not an alternative to that?
Okay, I think Julie and Randy have been pretty clear about what they're looking for. Tell me this, is this an extension of something we've already asked for? Because if this is a whole new set of information, that's a whole other
question. Well, our late filed Exhibit 5 is, I think this remains an extension of late filed Exhibit 5. I mean, late filed deals specifically with elevations around Devil's Lake, and these questions extend from there. So I do think it.
Okay, so to even put a finer point on it, we need the company to update their late filed exhibit number 5 to get information that answers the questions that have been brought forward today.
Or if they can show us where that area is discussed in their application or in the testimony, then there wouldn't need to be an update.
Okay, now, and if it does end up, I'm just thinking ahead here, the pipeline route goes, how far does it open up the new hearing category again? I mean, this was talked about in the hearing, but there's some point where...
Yeah, this is different. Those were actual reroutes discussed at the hearing. I mean, I if we are going to move this pipeline 2 miles to the north or so of Devil's Lake or somewhere else, I mean, I think that certainly opens it up to requiring a new hearing on that issue.
Right.
Or at least a notice of opportunity. But
well, I think that's the part, though. If the pipeline route comes in and it's a change, which if you're going to go 1-2 miles north, that is a new hearing. It's new landowners. It's everyone. So that's what I would see it, I guess.
The other ones are different because those fall under a different part of the statute. I mean, they were developed at the hearing and discussed at the hearing and worked out at the hearing by people who showed up at the hearing because they were right in that area. Moving it,
right
further in that area would open it up.
I guess just since Mitch brought up the other reroutes, Randy asked a question earlier about the additional turns that the pipeline would have at the Salmonson reroute. If you look at the affidavit of Barry Simonson, it's section 4, and it's right at the bottom of page 1, bottom of page 2. They state that the reroute was feasible from an engineering perspective, would reduce the number of bends required, and would be approximately the same length. So apparently this reroute has a benefit in that it does reduce the bends that are required to go from point A to point B through that area.
Except I was talking about the one on the UND land, and that one definitely increases the bends.
Okay. Gotcha.
So we square?
Yes, but should we set a...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, you know, I mean, I think it would help at least staff and legal. I mean, I don't know if the commissioners have had a chance to go through the order, if there were any other issues with anything in the order
yet. I looked through the order, and the only question I had was the part about the corridors, and you answered that question. Nothing else jumped up for me.
I was through it, and I thought it was fine.
I don't have any additional questions about the order at this point.
So we're just looking right now, focusing on that area between the proposed pipeline and CANDU, and why, what's blocking the pipeline there.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, and Julie brought up a good point about, since we're all here, let's do another work session. Mm-hmm. When do you think, Commissioner Fedorchuk, when do you think the next time?
How much time should we allow the company to get back to us on this? Any thoughts from staff or... A week?
Yeah, I tend to think we're going to be able to get the information
really quick.
Relatively quickly, I would say give. I mean, if, well, yeah, I mean, they've, I think, I mean, if you were to ask them, and I'm speaking for them, I think they would just say, geez, I hope we could get on the commission's meeting for the 25th. So why don't we see if we could schedule a work session. The 23rd or the Friday before would probably, well, you guys have hearings.
The 20th, though, I think we're here. We've got a PI meeting at 11. Maybe we're here before then. I'm open that morning of June 20th.
I wouldn't be. 19th is good for me.
In the morning.
I'd be booked up until late afternoon.
So just the opposite. Yeah.
The 20th, I have a 9 o'clock and 11, but I'm available that afternoon.
The 20th, Randy, in the afternoon?
That works for me.
It does? Mm-hmm. How about for our attorneys?
We'll make it work.
It'll work for Mitch, so we'll make it work.
Julie, Patrick?
I'm available.
Same one.
Yeah, that'd be good by me. Would you just?
I have a hearing at 10 o'clock that day. It should be over by 1:30. Could we say 1:30?
Sure.
Be safer.
Sure.
And then, of course, whatever
on
you.
The 20th.
Correct.
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and obviously, whenever this stuff comes in, we'll have a chance to review it, and hopefully, it doesn't show up at 19th at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, that would be helpful to get it a couple days in advance, if so staff can look at it. We can ask staff questions and, you know, be more prepared for the work session.
Okay, so Julie Prescott, will you make sure you get that noticed and all that stuff? I guess Daryl's in here, too. Okay. And once again, for the record, we have two Bryans and two Julies in this work session. Okay. All right, Commissioner Fedorchuk, anything else?
I don't.
Commissioner Christen?
I do not.
All right, attorneys and staff gurus. Okay, we'll go ahead and close the work session on case number PU 13-848. Thank you all.